It's time to speak out on the original Speak Out radio show. Speak Out is a public affairs program that serves you, our listeners, and the community you live in. Speak Out is all about listener participation. So call in anytime during the show. 928-854-5687. That's 854-5687. Speak Out on KNTR Talk is heard throughout the tri-state area. Listen on the radio at KNTRTalk.com and the TuneIn Radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. It's time to introduce you to the host of Speak Out. When legendary drummer Keith Moon was MIA, who did the Who turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
When the great Pele asked for a sub, who did his World Cup team turn to?
Yo, Paulie!
Now this world-renowned musician slash athlete has settled behind the microphone once again for your benefit. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only, I mean, could you imagine a twin? Paul Lavoie.
You can lay me down and watch me bleed, but you can't keep no chains on me. I'm born free.
All right, welcome to Speak Out. It's Tuesday, October 25th, 2022. And I do have guests here. They're just not here. Right, Marissa?
Yep.
Everybody, I don't know if you remember, Marissa Bielecki is our former intern. It's not that you're not here anymore. It's just that you're more than an intern now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, bring that just a little bit closer.
There you go.
Perfect. So now you're like, I call her our junior production person, right? Your nickname's Junior, I call you?
Yep.
All the time.
Junior.
She does a great job, by the way, folks.
Thank you.
We had some jingle challenges yesterday with a client, and you customized them so the tags are perfect. And I was like, wow, nice crossfade technique. Worked out perfectly. So anyway, our guests today are Mayor Cal Sheehy and Council Member Jenny Koch, and they're talking to the commander of the mothership right now. See, Marissa, I refer to the three radio stations, the group, Radio Central, as the mothership. So the commander of the mothership, of course, is Steve, right? Mr. Greeley. All right, perfect. See, I have an audience here today, folks. She laughs at, like, everything I say sometimes. Anyway, so they'll be in shortly, and I don't know, they're plotting the overthrow of the universe. Who knows, right?
Who knows?
When you're in the mothership or the bowels of the mothership, that's Steve's office, by the way. The
gotcha.
Bowels of the mothership. We're in the Speak Out kitchen with no sink. Marissa doesn't sit in on the show very much, so she has to learn the nomenclature. So that's what we're talking about right now, folks. Anyway, if you want to talk to the mayor or Councilmember Koch, when they arrive, 854-KNTR, 928-854-5687. Got lots of stuff to talk about today. The story in the paper about City Hall that's going to be brought before the council. We got a little cost. I wouldn't call it a cost overrun because that's more or less when you have a project that's underway. It's more like an estimated increase. So the mayor and I we'll go over that along with Councilmember Koch. Welcome to the show, the late Mayor Cal Sheehy.
You know, good morning, everyone. I was here for the record.
Yeah,
I just got stuck in the hallway.
You were here. You just weren't in the Speak Out kitchen with no sink.
Correct.
Same with Jenny. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Hi, how are you?
Jenny is a fellow Kiwanian, so we have to disclose that, right?
Kiwanians do have it. To, yes.
Rotarians don't.
We don't. Well, we don't have. There's only one Rotarian, which is me.
I think. I think in our group, I'm one of the longest running Kiwanians in our group.
Mm-hmm. You might be. Oh, in this group.
No, in our group, in our Kiwanis club, minus a couple of the Golden K's that came over to our group. I think our original Kiwanis club.
What about Mike?
Mike Carr. Longer than me, but
yeah.
I mean, as far as.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, I think I meant 17 years.
So. We have another council member who is in Kiwanis also, our new president, incoming
yes.
president, David Lane, for the next, I think it's a 2-year term. So
big commitment.
It is a big commitment. They yeah. asked me, and I'm like, you want somebody that shows up at the meeting after the show, meeting scheduled for noon, and I get there at 12:15, and And, yeah, I don't think you want to start the meeting 15 minutes late or without your president. So.
For 2 years.
Yeah, so I had to kind of decline on that one. You get that, right, Mr.
Yes,
Mayor?
Yes, I do.
All right, perfect. All right, not sure if anyone caught the game last night, Bears and the Patriots. But tonight we've got the Suns hosting Golden State. That's always a good game, even if it is October NBA basketball. 7 p.m. is the tip-off. No game scheduled tomorrow. You got the Ravens at the Bucks on Thursday night. And then our 5-2 Fighting Knights. They're kicking. The last two games, they've had the mercy clock running. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
You know what the mercy clock is? That's when you're ahead by so many points that the referee asks the other team, hey, do you want the clock to run? You know, or it's a mandatory. I'm not sure, but I think it's at the request or the okay of the other side, the team that's losing. I know they were up by 39 at the half. It was like 39-0.
Yeah, good for them.
So they left the clock running in the second half. Second game in a row. So this game might be a little bit tougher. They play the Peoria Panthers at home, 7 p.m. kickoff, 6:45 pregame with Steve Greeley and Bill Beckman. That'll be on the AM 980 AM and KNTRSports.com only. Over on the FM, you'll have the Suns and the Pelicans with the tip-off at 7 p.m. Again, that's 94.3, 100.5, 980 AM, KNTR Sports. Welcome to the team. Now, I didn't even have a chance to really go over any topics with you, but I wanted to talk about, it was probably my, I wouldn't say number one news story. The number one news story was Buster gave us some county fair numbers yesterday, and I don't know if you guys heard, but they came out with a profit. They came out ahead about $170,000.
Oh, good for them.
Yeah, it was, if I remember, 120, 170, somewhere in that area.
Yeah, no, that's great.
What's 50 grand, right? Anyway, I'm kidding. So the other story, though, the big story, tonight the council's going to talk about the new city hall, and it looks like...
No.
Courthouse.
Whoa, whoa. New courthouse.
Yes.
New courthouse. Yes, thank you. The new courthouse with, what is it, $900,000 increase from what they thought it was going to be?
No.
But we can't really call it an overrun, can we?
Well, it's actually, it's neither of those things because it actually is just incorrect reporting, unfortunately, in this case.
Really?
So when council met last to go over the 90% review documents, the city staff was looking for direction from the council about the second story. And the second story is going to be a multipurpose community room. So it could have our boards, committees, commissions meeting there. Different community meetings that we have, for example, Coffee with the Mayor was had to be canceled for nearly 3 months this summer because we didn't have a location to go that had the technology set up because the room was busy over at the police department.
Sure.
So when council had that discussion, council did, by consensus, give direction to the staff to finish the second floor for that community room, which would be an additional $900,000. So those two options were presented to us at the 90% review, and then it was included in the council communication for what we're going to be considering tonight. So tonight we'll be considering the renovations to the new courthouse, which will provide two new courtrooms, space for jury rooms, offices, public, as well as the community room upstairs for $6.1 million total, which is the exact same number that we were presented when we had that discussion.
But now the story said that was without the second story improvements. Is that still true?
No, yeah, completely. The reporting was just incorrect today. Some of the facts were missed down there. Generally, they do a great job, but just a few facts. It's complex, and we've been talking about it for 6 years. And so, no, the 6.1 would be finishing the entire first floor for court services, and then the second floor for the community multipurpose room, complete. So that would be $6.1 million on a contract not to exceed. So should the costs go up...
You mean $5.1 million, correct?
No,
$6.1 million.
Okay. Yeah, so that's the five.
I thought that was the original number.
No, yeah. So it's $6.1 million is the total number to do all of that that we'll be considering this evening. And it's a cost not to exceed contract. So if cost overruns come into place, the contractor eats those costs. If the costs come under the 6.1, the city actually will get that benefit and we will pay less based on the costs being less.
How long do you expect the council to mull over this item?
You know, should the action in front of us is really just to award the contract, the construction contract, or not. We've had multiple discussions about this with the public and in public hearings.
For years.
For 6 years now we've been talking about it. The judge has been talking about it for 10 years, about the need for it. So I would expect because it is a lot of money, I expect it to be a robust conversation, but it should be a fairly simple action in front of us. We are paying for this in cash. Because we've been talking about it for so long, we've been able to save the money to be able to pay cash as we go for this particular project. We also have all of those components ready. We brought the contractor on early on in the design phase to ensure that we were cutting costs at the front end instead of on the back end. And we've looked at every alternative in between. So we've looked at renting space or using or utilizing another space within our community, building from the ground up on City Hall complex, and this is the most affordable way to do so.
Jenny, you're entering your third year on the council, correct?
Third term.
Boy, yeah. Am I off today. Your third term on the council. Mm-hmm. You must be really ready for this project to start.
I am. I just look, back when we started, and hindsight's always 20/20, but if we'd have done this back when we first started, imagine how much money we would have saved at that point. So we can't put projects off and think that they're going to get any less expensive, especially in this day and age. And we need a courthouse, or we owe that to our citizens to have a courthouse. And so our staff has done a great job working with the numbers we've given them, with the direction we've given them, and then turn around and change and go back and come back and go back. And it's time to get this project done and to move on to bigger and better things and move on to the next project ahead of us. So this is something that we've needed, and they've done a great job and done what we've asked. And so I think it'll be a great conversation, but definitely time to make this happen.
So what do we get for a maximum cost of $6.1 million in a courthouse these days? What actually comes with that?
Yeah, so it'll be the full renovation. There's pretty strict guidelines from the administration of courts and through the Supreme Court of Arizona on what the requirements are for safety flow and those types of things. So it meets all of those, but it'll be two courtrooms. It'll be hearing rooms. It'll be jury deliberation rooms, as well as offices and counter space for the public to engage with the court on the ground floor level. And then on the second level will be the multi-purpose community room, including an elevator that will lead from the first floor to the second floor. In addition, it'll have all of the security enhancements. And then there are some areas the stucco needs some repair. And so in today's consideration, it also will have the outdoor stucco repair that it needs to be done on this building. So it'll be fully functioned. We'll be able to move in and enjoy it for many years to come, providing not only the court services we do today, but also expanding our specialty courts, which really lowers the recidivism rate of our citizens and reduces costs on operations for the entire city.
Now, what about the current courthouse that we're using over on College Drive? How long does that agreement last?
Through August of 2023. So we need to get moving.
Oof, yeah.
We do have a commitment that they will work with us as long as we're moving forward. So if we're not moving forward, they really have a strong interest in us leaving because their courts are also expanding with population increases and caseloads and those types of things. They need the space as well. And so they have committed that they'll work with us as long as we're making forward movement to get ourselves into our own courthouse.
Well, I could say the positive part of this project, obviously, would be that the building is already in place.
Yes.
Not like the Nomadic, right, where you're waiting and waiting. It's in stages. You're worried about the supply chain and that. But still, there are supply chain issues. Is that something that's going to be addressed tonight?
We'll talk about that with the contractor. If we do award the contract this evening, based on all of the public engagement we've done over the years, then they are prepared to start immediately, and we're hopeful we can see some really good progress within the next year to have a better move-in date of when we'll actually be able to facilitate those services at the new courthouse.
All right, perfect. You guys ready to take a break? We're going to take a break and regroup.
Sounds good.
I didn't really get to talk about the agenda with you tonight. So.
Sure.
All right, back with more in a moment. And Marissa didn't know who Little Big Town was.
I'm not very educated in country, I must say.
Right, she's not a country person. You like country, though, right?
I like country music.
Jenny likes country, and you like everything.
Yeah, I do like everything.
Even Celine Dion.
Yes.
We've gone over that before. Yeah.
According to you. The world according to Paul. Yeah.
My wacky world, right up here. So, anyway, the reason I brought up Little Big Town, Jenny, is because George Strait, Chris Stapleton, and Little Big Town are going to be in Glendale at State Farm Stadium.
That's the opening of their stadium tours.
Right. It's going to be amazing. Like six dates on the tour. It's a mini tour for George Strait, but Phoenix is one of them. It's going to be pretty amazing. Tickets go on sale Friday. Just listen to our sister station, KJJJ 102.3 Nash FM, and get all the info because those commercials are going to start running very soon. So I think they go – no, they don't go on sale this Friday. They go on sale November 4th, which is a Friday.
Next Friday.
Right. That was my bad. All right. Back with more in a moment. Stay with us on Speak Out. I'm Paul Lavoie, along with Mayor Cal Sheehy and Council Member Jenny Koch. We'll be right back. And Marissa, who's no longer an intern. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I know it's before noon, but it's 5 o'clock somewhere, right? In the words of Kenny Chesney? No, who's 5 o'clock somewhere? Somebody help me out. You know Jenny, right?
I do.
Jimmy Buffett. Jimmy Buffett.
There you go.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about the wine, the beer, the whiskey. Anyways, I'm in a Little Big Town mood for some reason. It's probably that George Strait song I heard or a commercial I heard this morning. So, all right, Speak Out, brought to you in part by Mojave Mortgage. Love those guys. Also, Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford, GDK LLC, Springberg Wealth Management, Patio Paradise, Les Olson IT, your company's one source for office technology. Go online to lesolson.com/Kingman. Les Olson, OLSON.com/Kingman. Don't forget, we stream live and our show archives are at KNTRTalk.com. And we're on the Lake Havasu City app as well. We send Alyssa the show every day, and that's available at the Google Play and Apple iStore. So there you have it. I'm kind of crossing over to the dark side with Apple right now. I just got a new iPad, a new refurbished iPad.
Is this your first Apple use, or do you have an iPhone?
It's my first iPad that's really updatable. I inherited one just for band lyrics at one time, and I really didn't use it for anything except that. But now this one I can use for Spotify and different apps and that sort of thing. So,
nice.
Yeah, I'm crossing over to the dark side. So, or which you know, whichever way you look at it. So there you go. I'm an Android user. So there you have it.
Yeah, I'm an iPhone user, and
how long?
For a while.
The funny thing is, my very first editing computer for video was an iMac.
Yes.
A very high-end iMac. So,
yeah, it makes it pretty easy.
Yeah.
But I go back and forth because of, you know, work computers are all regular PCs.
My Windows computer, I keep the toolbar on the top and everything just like a Mac user. So anyway, it's just strange that I am a Android user. So, all right, let's talk about more stuff for tonight's meeting. You want to talk about the sign ordinance first?
Sure, yeah, that'll be on our agenda this evening. So this will be the first read. We've had a lot of different conversations about signs. So it's actually two different pathways. One is about the lit commercial signs on buildings, so the billboard type signs that we're starting to see go up across the community.
And then the LED
screen boards, yes. And so that we'll be updating the code to address some of that, and then also the political signs, which came forward at the request of council based on the violations that we saw during the primary process of campaign signs throughout the community. So we'll be addressing what those look like and updating the code to adhere to that. So we, in on the political sign side of things, you're not supposed to put signs on public property, which makes sense, which include the railings along culverts and those types of things.
Oh, you don't say.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of that this election cycle.
Especially from state candidates, if I can say.
Yes. You know, generally what I have found being a candidate myself in the past is that people would look and see a cluster of signs and just assume permission. I've never ran a campaign that way. I always got permission of the property owner to place my signs,
right.
Commercial or residential, but many candidates just see a cluster and think it's okay to put your signs there. And so we want to address that. We also have some no-sign zone areas, basically the tourist areas, the main downtown corridor area, and we want to enhance that to ensure people are familiar with that. Now, candidates can still put a sign in those zones as long as they have permission of the property owner, but their right-of-way ability goes away in those zones. So that's the political sign side of things. And then on the electronic signs, we'll talk about not moving and flashing. So we're not looking to have, Casino Row or something that's real flashy and video-like, but something that is more static and then stays for several seconds and then moves on to the next message if it is. Talk about the brightness of it and then also the square footage of it.
Now, I think if I'm not sure if I'm right on this, but I think that Bullhead City has a restriction for after 10 p.m. they don't have those signs on. In other words, a dark screen because of the light factor that, you know, those emit a lot of light. So is that something under consideration?
That is not, actually, but that's a good point. We can talk about that this afternoon during our meeting. Now, is that for billboards in the Bullhead City area, or is that actual?
The electronic ones.
The electronic billboards.
Yes.
Yes.
The
yes.
LED billboards, yes. Yeah.
That goes
and
in with state law.
Billboards.
Yeah, so.
I know there's one in front of a business on Highway 95.
That's actually part of their sign package. So,
I see.
So each commercial business has, depending on what their zoning district is currently in our current sign code and what's proposed, is allowed to have a sign package. So a certain amount of square footage of signage. In that particular one that you're talking about on Highway 95, they used all of their sign package on electronic digital signage.
I got you.
So there is no additional signage at all on that business besides what is on that digital sign. So that's what we want to address. It's the cost is coming down. It's more feasible for businesses to pay for electronic signage. So we just want to make sure that the integrity of our general plan that was adopted by the voters stays intact with the new and changing technologies. But I believe the one you're referencing in Bullhead City has to do with actual billboards, which are much larger. Mm-hmm. We're talking about limiting the sign to a 32 square feet, so basically like 4x8 or so.
Okay, I see. What about signs with businesses that decide to change their signage or add signage or something? Is that something that a business has to go in front of the council to request?
They don't have to go in front of council, but each business, again, depending on what zoning district they're in, has the ability to put up signage that is compatible with that district. If they want to do anything further, they could do and request a variance, but they would do that through the Planning and Zoning Commission. But anytime that businesses want to change their signage, it's always good to check in with the city just to make sure they're in compliance with the current code.
Okay, I gotcha. I'm going to stick with the little big town theme, Little White Church. You like that song?
Absolutely.
That's a great song. All right. I'm Paul Lavoie along with Lake Havasu City Mayor Cal Sheehy and Councilmember Jenny Koch. And we'll be back with more in a moment. You can give us a call, 854-KNTR, 928-854-5687. Stay with us. We will return. And you're officially auditing the show now, right, Marissa?
I am.
You are. She's officially auditing the show. All right. Back with more in a moment.
There's a price for keeping me. I might be cheap, but I ain't free. No more calling me baby. No more loving like crazy. Till you take me down.
Sometimes in the middle of the night, I can feel you again. But I just.
All right, we're back on Speak Out. And brought to you in part by Arizona Financial Credit Union, also Mojave Community College, Herb's Herbs, SunPower by Esme Electric, SamsGuns.com, and by the Lewis team, Remax by the Lake with team leader Bobby Lewis and Julie Lewis. And I know the mayor and Jenny both echo these sentiments, but put your money where your heart is and shop local. Right, guys?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. We have many great local businesses to support, and what you're doing is supporting local families.
I needed a special cable to run from my my new iPad, obviously, to a soundboard. And it was a mini to mini, and I had to go like 25 foot on it. You know what I mean by mini to mini, the mini plug to a mini plug on the other side.
Yes.
Stereo. And I didn't want to go Amazon with it. And I'm like, I know I can find this locally. And I call them like the new Radio Shack of Main Street. It's River City Music.
Oh, nice.
Dave Traub, okay. Eric Traub.
Yes.
Yeah, the music store up there. They have everything you need with that sort of thing.
Amazing. Yeah, that's great.
So shop local, folks. You know, you'll help out a business. And it kind of makes you feel better. Plus, you get it immediately. You don't have to wait for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's my tip for the day, local business tip for the day. There you have it. All right, so I want to move on to short-term rentals, because we talked about this a little bit yesterday at the county level, and Buster thinks, well, there's really not much the county can do. It's more in the city's hands and the state legislature, obviously. So where are we at with the state legislature and our plan? Does planning and zoning have a say in any of this?
They'll review some of the code suggestions that we go through.
So where are we with the revised state law?
Yeah, so the state law went into effect at the end of September, and so we're looking at a variety of different ways. There's going to be a model code that the League of Cities and Towns will be putting out, but there's also some ability to have flexibility on different areas that matter and are unique to communities. So we're taking a little bit more time to understand what those can do for our community to address it. But Lake Havasu City has been advocating for local control on short-term rentals, basically allowing us the ability to manage them at the local level for what makes sense. We have no intention to get rid of short-term rentals. Short-term rentals have been part of our market mix since the 70s when Mr. McCulloch started this great community. But we do have to find a way that they can coexist with neighbors in our communities. We have success here in Lake Havasu City. We adopted an ordinance in 2014 that worked perfect to allow the city to regulate the short-term rentals in a manner that allowed peaceful enjoyment of the neighborhood by all parties. Unfortunately, in 2016, the governor and state legislature decided that they knew better, and they decided to pass a state law that really has exploded the short-term rental industry in the state of Arizona.
Right.
We've advocated over several years, and so last year at the beginning of the legislative session, we decided to do something a little bit differently, and we reached out to Senator Borelli and Representative Biasucci, and they both agreed to help us. And Representative Biasucci ran a bill in the House. His bill was not the successful one that got passed, but there were some of the components of that that were wheeled into the new bill, and then Senator Borelli supported it in the Senate, and we were able to get this law passed. Now, with that being said, we're so grateful for Senator Borelli and Representative Biasucci, but it's still not enough. And they know that, but that's how the sausage is made at the legislature. And
slowly.
Slowly, yes.
And, bit by bit.
Yes, and we do need more. I mean, we need the ability to be able to really take it at a local level, because there are unique challenges in each of the communities across the state. And so we're still going to advocate for more. But what this allows us to do is create a local registration process, so we'll actually know the short-term rentals that are in our community. Prior to this, state law allowed for a state registration process, but we'll have a local one. We also will have a notification similar to our zoning, so basically front, back, left, right of the property, notifying the families that live there with mm-hmm. a 24-hour contact phone number and some additional measures. So that's what we'll bring forth in our meeting in November to change the code, and then we'll continue to advocate with the state legislature for more local control on this issue. But we're grateful again,
right,
to at least make this step. But we know it's not enough, and we know it's not everything, but it's something.
Okay, so looking to the future, right? We're in a campaign right now. Obviously, a new governor will be in office in January. We don't know if it'll be a Democrat or Republican, but there's so much focus on the border, on crime, on fentanyl. I haven't heard anything about short-term rentals, and that might be one of the biggest problems facing the state right now. Is there anything the cities can do, or do you have a plan in place for when there is a new governor to meet with that governor?
Sure. We've actually started that work already, and you may recall I've advocated on this show and in other appearances throughout the community that when you meet the candidates for governor, to ask them about short-term rentals, ask them about water, ask them about the things that really matter to our community, and let's get their feedback on it. So we've already been talking to the candidates about short-term rentals and water, for that matter, and really understanding what their policies are going to be and what their support's going to be. It's going to be an education. I mean, certainly cities and towns with short-term rentals is just one small industry among many in our state. So we're competing for airtime, if you will, with the candidates. But once they're actually in office, we'll continue to educate the candidates about the impacts to communities.
Sure.
Based on short-term rentals.
What do you both make of this program that's a pilot program in Sedona that's reimbursing property owners up to $10,000 a year, depending on the size of the are you familiar with that?
I am, yes.
What do you make of that program? Is it even legal?
That's questionable if it's legal, and we also are watching it carefully. I don't believe it's going to work, just because some of the short-term rentals make a lot more than $10,000 a year.
Right.
And so it's really an offset, and how do you compensate one property owner for the use of their property and not compensate another property owner for the use of their property that chooses to live in their home.
Right.
And use taxpayer dollars to do that.
I really, and the $10,000 usually only applies to a 3-bedroom, from what I read. It's a tier schedule that they go by, you know, one, two, and three bedroom. So, but the property owner would commit to a lease with obviously a renter for 1 or 2 or 3 years, and then they would be compensated for part of the rent that they lost from not having a short-term rental. So that's basically the premise of the program.
And it sounds great until you talk about where's the money coming from.
And it's, right.
It's coming from other property owners and taxpayers. And so, again, we're keeping a watchful eye on it. We're open to any and all solutions for housing and short-term rental management, if you will. You know, I don't want to use the word regulation because that's not what we're going for. We really just want to be able to manage what's happening in the neighborhoods. And so we're watching, and it's very new. It's a pilot program, as you had mentioned. So we don't really have a lot of results yet for it, but definitely watching it. I know Councilmember Koch has been dealing with short-term rentals for
a long time,
quite some time, and was on the forefront of our 2014 ordinance.
Yep, for 2 years we had a great program going, and we had great feedback from the community. It was going well, and then it wasn't immediate in 2016 when we started to get a lot of the complaints, but as that particular industry grew, the growing pains were definitely felt by the council and by our residents, and it's tough when the state takes that ability away from you when you were doing something that was working, and now
right.
You've been given no solutions to go back to your original. I mean, they should have taken a page out of our playbook, in my mind, but...
No, there you go. Well, you've got big lobbies now with Airbnb and Vrbo in that too, and that's a big factor. So, what about inventory now in the city though? You have a lot more property inventory than you had, say, a year ago, because of rising interest rates and that, you know, to buy a home. Are you still hearing complaints about the rental rates being, you know, too high for those people maybe in the service industry or in other jobs within city that rent and don't own?
Yeah, so we have seen a change and a shift in the real estate market.
Sure.
And it is shifting into a different phase than we've experienced in the past. So we do have more inventory. We do have rentals available. We have rentals that are available for more than one day. So they aren't all rented on the first day that they're listed.
Right.
And so we are seeing some of those types of things, but the actual monthly cost has not seemed to be impacted yet to lower it or level it out. So it's achievable for all segments of our community. But I would anticipate that would come as, you know, it's a supply and demand issue. And, you know, I've taken the position on housing that, you know, inventory will help this. So I've advocated and supported also all types of inventory, whether it be multifamily housing, apartments, which we could use more of and would love for that to happen, condos, single family residential. We've even done some manufactured homes over the last couple of years in certain key areas of the community so that we have just more inventory and then citizens have a choice. And with those
right.
choices are different prices of entry based on the choice that they make that's right for the family.
Well, a recent article I just read, too, is that a lot of short-term rental owners are having buyer's regret, if you will, because of disposable incomes going down due to inflation.
Yes.
You know, and that's become a problem. And now they're kind of rethinking, hey, maybe I should long-term rent this or rent it out, you know, for a year, 2 years, as far as leases go. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. The problem may just correct itself
yes.
with the market.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, no, I think it will. We are seeing a lot of furnished rentals, which mm-hmm. would tell you that these might have been short-term rentals at one point that are now converting into long-term furnished rentals.
Interesting. I haven't checked the market lately.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes.
All right, let's move on to the channel.
Yes.
Again, we're talking with Lake Havasu City Mayor Cal Sheehy and Council Member Jenny Koch. I was just going to give out the number, but somebody has ESP. So let's go to the phones. Caller, you're live on Speak Out.
Hello. Paul and Mayor and Jenny, this is Wayne.
Hey, Wayne, how are you?
Hi, Wayne.
Good. I know you guys were going to change the subject, but I got in on the tail end. You know, I wish there was a way we could get more apartment buildings and get incentives or somehow rather than like the tiny homes and all. I don't think those are really the best use of the property. And apartment buildings, another nice thing about them, they don't lend themselves to the Airbnb short-term rental thing. So I think that would help the workforce housing out better. I just wish there was a way we can get people to build them.
Yeah, no, we agree with you wholeheartedly. And, you know, a lot of those tiny homes that you are seeing going up are zoned in multifamily districts. So they don't even have to get an action of the planning and zoning or the council to do that. That's already allowed in the development code. So we are, you might have followed the downtown density conversation we had this summer, and that was to prevent those tiny homes from using those key multifamily housing lots for those types of projects going forward. And that's what we are trying to address there. And then we are working with the PED, the Partnership for Economic Development and Housing Study, to try and encourage more developers to come in and bring apartment homes to our community. So we're hopeful that something will be able to happen within the short-term future, but it is a very difficult issue that we're trying to solve.
Yeah, it is tricky and complicated. And I see now that's something I just learned. I did not know that that did not have to go in front of planning and zoning. So that's something I just learned.
Right.
I learned something on the show all the time.
There
that's
you go.
Great. Yes.
All right, but I think everybody's doing a great job and keep it up.
Thanks, Wayne.
Thanks, Wayne.
Hey, thanks, Wayne.
Okay.
We appreciate it. You know, that's all I need is a tiny home, as long as it has a place to park my car, you know, out of the elements and that. A little garage space for storage, maybe, put my drums in there and a few other things. I'm good.
Yeah, they
I really don't need a lot of space, guys.
Yeah, they seem to be very popular, but, you know, people are mentioning it more and more as there's more infilling that, you know, they don't like them or they don't think that it's a good use of the land. But it's zoned that way.
Yeah.
And so the general plan supports it. The development code has that in there already, and they're not looking for a variance or even having to go in front of
sure.
the planning and zoning or the council for that matter.
Not everybody needs a 5-bedroom, 3-bath, in my opinion. So at least this person doesn't. So all right, let's move on to dredging.
Yes.
The south end of the channel obviously is in bad need of some work, some dredge work.
Yes, the south end of the channel really has turned into quite a navigational hazard, and we applied for an emergency use permit to be able to dredge the channel in the front end of our boating season. So we're hopeful to be able to do it in June of this year. And then we pushed it to July, thinking that maybe just one more week would get us the approvals we needed. So anyhow, our very quick emergency permit finally is going to get approved in December. So we'll be able to do it in
kind
December.
Of an oxymoron.
Right. But we'll be able to get that dredged out there in December, which will open up and free some of that area. This summer, in response to it, we did have to close down a few of the parking areas along the channel because of the navigation issues that it was causing as we were getting more sediment coming down from Pima Wash there. So we'll be able to get those back up, restore those spots, dredge it out, and hope that solves that that issue.
The north end was done recently, correct?
No, it actually was the south end, but it was several years ago. It actually was over a decade ago.
The Dreamcatcher back in the day had some problems getting through there.
We would like to do some north end dredging. So the biggest navigational issue right now is on the south end.
Sure, sure.
We were working with, at the time, Senator McSally and the tribe, as well as the city, to come in and do some dredging over there in the north end. It is causing some issues over there for the Tecopa, as well as some of the shoreline areas in there. So we would love to address that, but this right now is turning into quite a safety hazard where it's really only one-way traffic, if you will. And then there's also beachgoers that are trying to use that area for swimming as well. So it really just creates quite a safety hazard.
What's the cost involved with something like that?
Yeah, so we're still working through those areas on where we're going to move the dredge material to, and that's really what's going to drive the cost. And
oh, sure.
So, you know, transportation of wet material is obviously very costly because it's very heavy. Last time we were able to use part of the Rotary Bowl area.
Right.
And fill that
in. I was just thinking that.
And so there wasn't any transportation costs incurred at all. But we've heard from citizens that they really want to keep that as a grassy area that folks can, you know, play frisbee and ball and enjoy that as a park area. So we're looking at all of the alternatives of where to put the material, which then we'll know what the cost would be.
You could turn it into a giant workout hill, right?
Yeah, I don't think that's what the citizens want from what I've heard. So,
I understand.
Yes.
I'm kidding. So, all right, one last topic. You wanted to talk about the Community Health Associates. We talked about this with Chief Doyle also. Jenny, did you want to chime in on that as well?
On the health associates?
Yes.
Well, I mean, just as from a hospital perspective, we have such a need in this community. And, you know, again, just across the nation in general, the safety and welfare of our officers, and that these aren't necessarily areas where the officers have been trained, nor is it their specialty. And so to send them out in some of these situations, mm-hmm. This is an awesome opportunity for us to partner with this group and to have those resources available. And I don't see any downside to this partnership at all.
You know, it's a bringing behavior health opportunities to our community, which are sorely needed in communities across America, but definitely here in Lake Havasu City. And with Community Health Associates, they'll office out of our police department, so they'll be able to have one-on-one relationships with our officers that are on the street. And this is something that our police officers have been asking for, is that, as Councilmember Koch had mentioned, either dispatched to a call, that it really is more of a behavioral health related matter,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have the time or resources necessarily to handle that call and move on to the next call that might be coming through. These folks can come in, address the situation, and get those people to the services that they need if a crime has not been committed. So surprisingly, our police respond to lots of calls that are not crime-related, and this is just one area. So Community Health Associates will be able to provide some behavior health immediate crisis response folks that can go out in the field if necessary or address whatever issue might be coming through. And their first week of operation, they actually were able to help with a code enforcement issue. So a resident that had some behavior health issues was an issue for our code enforcement officers, and together they were able to bring up a resolution, which will now make that neighborhood very thankful for solving that issue, and made that expedient where the police officers didn't have to be a part of that process.
So we talked about Chief Doyle earlier in the show in referencing this issue. We also talked about it off the air. How's the search for a new police chief coming? We have about a minute and a half.
It's going well. City Manager Jessica Knudsen is responsible for hiring city staff, and he has went out and done a national search. We have already gone through the first phase of interviews, and he is now going through second phase interviews. So Chief Doyle has been a really solid, great member of our police force for decades. And
32 years, I think he said.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Back in the 80s, he started with the department, and it has been the chief for nearly 15 years or so, and has done such a tremendous job. So he is retiring in December, and City Manager Jess Knutson is working on fulfilling that position.
What's the scoop on the retirement party? Do we know yet?
We still don't know. You ask me every time.
Well, that's my job.
Yes.
That's my job.
Did you know that Chief Doyle was in Kiwanis when I first started Kiwanis?
No.
Yes, he
was. And why isn't he in Kiwanis now?
You'll have to ask him the next time. He was a fellow Kiwanian.
That's why I'm asking you. I didn't know that, or I would have recruited him. Since he's retiring now, he'll have plenty of time to go to Kiwanis meetings and volunteer for Toys for Tots and all kinds of other projects that we have at Kiwanis. Yeah, we need you back, Chief. All right. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it. Lake Havasu City Mayor Cal Sheehy, Council Member Jenny Koch, and I'll be back with more in a moment. We're going to talk about this Aloha, the Luau Experience, coming up in November with United Way hosting. All right, back with more in a moment. Stay with us on Speak Out. All right, welcome back to Speak Out. I got about less than a minute, but I'll tell you about the Aloha, the Luau Experience, Saturday, November 12th. It's going to be at the Nautical Beachfront Resort, and you're going to want to get your tickets. It's $140 is the base ticket, and $225 all exclusive. And it's Saturday, November 12th, again, at the Nautical from 3 to 8 p.m., and give the United Way a call. 855-6333 is where you'll find the tickets. All right, on tomorrow's show, we've got Lake Havasu Unified School District, and we've got the Havasu Community Choir coming in. Hannity is up next, preceded by Fox News.
This is KNTR Talk, AJJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM and 106.3, the voice of the free.